Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, Thanksgiving is just a few weeks away, and you may celebrate by making some food that has been served in your family for generations. And on the show today, we'll be talking about one such food. It's called fry bread. And our guest is Kevin Millard. He's a law professor and journalist, originally from Oklahoma, member of the Seminole Nation, and Kevin has written a new children's book. It's called Fry Bread, A Native American Family Story. I love the book. And we'll talk about it and why this food has such a rich connection with Native Americans. Maybe you've made fry bread. Is it a tradition in your family? We want to know more about it. Join the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Kevin Millard, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, so how do you go from being a law professor to writing a children's book? You might get that question from time to time. Was it difficult?
I definitely do. Well, I'm a parent. I had my first child in 2012. And when I became a parent, I wanted to get books for him. And so I'm African and Native American. My partner is Asian American. So we had a lot of ethnicities going on
in
our household. And so I was looking for books for them, you know, like your regular Goodnight Moon, the Pigeon books and stuff like that. But I also wanted to get books where the people on the pages would reflect their identity. So I was looking for the African American ones. I was looking for, you know, other ones. I was looking for books about Hanukkah, Jewish books, Latino books. But when it came to Native subjects, I really could not find anything. It was almost impossible. And what I did find out there, all of the books were not written by Native people, and all of the subjects were about Thanksgiving or Sacagawea or Squanto, something that happened a long time ago in the past, and there was nothing about modern people. And it was so appalling to me that I just decided to write my own.
And you've written a dandy. And let's talk about the book. How did you land on fry bread?
Well, so, you know, it's always best to write about what you know. And I grew up in Oklahoma, and I grew up making fry bread and eating fry bread with all these old ladies in my family. And I never had grandparents because my parents are a little bit older, at least for someone who was born in the 70s. I was born in the 70s. And so all of my grandparents had already died before I was born, but all of their siblings were still alive. So I had two aunts who were sisters of my grandmother who made fry bread, and they made different versions of fry bread. And so they both made it a little bit differently. And I remember just like people talking about it and, you know, judging which one was the better version of fry bread, right? And each one was good, but in a different way. And so, and I just remember really enjoying that. And then, you know, I see that no one else has written about, you know, a kid's book about fry bread. But the thing is about anything regarding a culturally central food, people have major and very emotional disagreements about what's the right way to do it. Right? You know, whether it's like pizza or barbecue, or it could be like kimchi. Someone told me Kugel one time, right? And everyone thinks that their version is the best one and everybody else's is wrong, right? That's usually the only kind of thing people can agree on, is that like you're wrong because my version is right. And that will be because like their grandma or their mom, like maybe sometimes their dad might make it. But that is so central for fry bread. And it's very fun too, right? To tell everybody else's version is wrong. But, you know, it makes me think about, you know, there aren't there isn't one way to make fry bread. And, you know, everyone's version is very subjective. And, you know, people are very jingoistic about their cultural foods. And I just thought this is a great way to also talk about natives in the United States. We're all different. We all have different versions. We have people that are African ancestry, people that might look white, people that might be of Asian ancestry. I know one native guy that grew up in France, right? So yeah. Then when you meet him, he's a French guy, right? He has this French accent, like he's very European, but he's an enrolled member of a native nation in the United States. And so he's still Indian, right? So yeah. You can't take that away from him. And that's how he identifies. And it might be different than the stereotype of people, you know, living in Arizona on a reservation and they're Navajo or one of the like five tribes that most people can recognize, but there's so much more diversity and it's so big and everybody's identity or fry bread, so to say, is right in their eyes, and I want them to be seen and feel powerful about that.
How did talk about how fry bread became a part of the culture?
Yeah, so well, it starts off in the mid 1800s, where Native people were removed from ancestral lands and moved forcibly and very bloodily to new lands, right? So people are moved from, you know, Seminoles were moved from Florida to Oklahoma, or the Cherokees come from North Carolina and Georgia to Oklahoma, or Navajos were moved from one spot out west to another spot. So then these people, when they were forced to move it to these new lands, they're removed from whatever foods that they would have known for thousands of years, right? These are indigenous people. So these are folks that have never, you know, like travel is different then, right? So then all of the food that they're gathering, it's part of their culture. So you're going from Florida, like this tropical environment, to Oklahoma, which is not tropical. What are you going to eat, right? They don't have Whole Foods. There's no Amazon. Right. So the government is giving them these rations in these new areas. And these rations are things like flour, sugar,
salt. Yeah.
You know, everything, you know, like your basic commodities. And those people, the Navajo or the Diné were the first to do this. They are making from the best of what they had, which was survival. Right. This was the food about deprivation. And so, you know, over these years for like, you know, 150, 160 years now, we've made fry bread into something that is central to family, to getting together. It's also a reflection. It's something very unique that Native people do. So we've taken the worst, like those first people did, and made the best of it. And now it's something that everyone looks forward to when you have a family gathering or, you know, a tribal dinner or even like, you know, a public fair. Everyone loves to eat fry bread.
It is. It reminds me of so many other in some ways. I spent some time at the University of the West Indies in Trinidad, and one of the soups that was made down there was a cow heel soup.
Wow.
And it was made, and it was, at the time, way back when, the people who were had taken over the natives there, they had raised cattle, and so they the natives got the heels part of the of the animal, and the English kept the rest. And so it became they made a soup out of cow heels, and so now it's sort of something that gets done as a cultural thing.
Right, it's unique to Trinidad.
Yeah, unique to Trinidad, or lutefisk for the Norwegian.
Oh, right, exactly. That's a perfect one
for the Norwegian.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like, and the thing about it is people are so strong about their feelings. So I remember, actually, this is great that it's Wisconsin. So I remember I went to graduate school at the University of Michigan, and one of my closest friends there was this Native woman from Wisconsin. So she grew up in the northern part of Wisconsin, and, you know, like there are a lot of Native people in Michigan, and I'm from Oklahoma, so most of the Native people in Michigan were like from Michigan or Wisconsin or Minnesota, somewhere around in the region. And we would have these, you know, get-togethers, and people are talking about home and food and what it's like. And I remember just having these discussions, and it was like, I was feeling like not that Indian, right? Because like their stories were so different than mine. And, you know, the ways that they grew up were so incredibly different that I was like, this is really bizarre. Like, what is the relationship of all of us here together? And I remember we would have these like arguments. They were very friendly, but then I would feel kind of bad that like my contributions were not really that good, because theirs were like, well, of course this is the way you do it, right? It was like more local. And I've always thought, and I've always remembered that, and I've always enjoyed the conversations and then the friendships. But it's, you know, it's different wherever you go, because if one Native person went to Los Angeles, right, where, you know, Los Angeles, New York, Minneapolis, Tulsa, Oklahoma, these are the places in metropolitan areas where most Natives currently live today. The highest population of Native people for any city in the country is New York City. So if you want to go where, like, you know, where are all the Native people in the United States, you need to go to Queens, because that's where all the people actually are. But we don't think of Native people in these areas. And so, like, if you went, you know, where, you know, say you even grew up in, you know, Seminole tribe in Florida, right? So there's Seminole tribe of Florida and there's Seminole Nation of Oklahoma. And I remember meeting people from the Seminole tribe, right? And then we have this shared culture, but it's definitely different, right? Because like those are the people that, you know, were not removed to Oklahoma. And so they're there. But the way that they do things is just so incredibly different. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like we all kind of, people look a little bit similar. They have the same food, like they have the same patchwork, they have the same stories that we do, but it almost seemed like a completely different Indian nation, and they could speak these languages like fluently. And I remember just being floored, you know, like these people, they could be my cousins, but then like the only thing that we would have in common is this shared culture, but their shared culture is definitely different than mine. But all of these stories are valid, and I want everyone to be able to see this great, vast, kind of like very complicated soup that is Indian country today.
And I want you to talk about the story that you tell and how you tell the story in your book in just a second. Our guest today, Kevin Millard, law professor and journalist. He has a book, a children's book out. It's called Fry Bread, A Native American Family Story. It's great talking with him. Certainly, if you want to join in, we've got some callers online, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking today with Kevin Millard, a law professor and journalist, regular writer for the New York Times. He's interviewed politicians, writers, tribal leaders, and even some movie stars. And his children's book is titled Fry Bread, A Native American Family Story. Questions for him, maybe an experience to share. Have you eaten fried bread? Do you make it? Do you like it? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And Kevin, we got Mike from Greenbush has been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Mike, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I love fry bread, but I just recently discovered the symbolic of unleavened bread for the Jewish tradition.
Yeah.
Back in the days when the Israelites were slaves of the Egyptians had leavening, and their bread was basically typical bread that we consume. But the Israelis didn't have any yeast, so basically their symbol of their freedom is unleavened bread, which I thought was pretty profound because I can't stand the taste of it, but it has symbolism for their whole ethnic culture about their freedom from slavery.
Mike, thanks for that call. Kevin, a comment?
Yeah, so I think that there are a lot of these stories where you could sum up the history of a group in a certain food, and this is the same thing, right, where it comes from this very dark past, right, where, and it's something that we don't talk about a lot in school, right, like, where did all of this land that the United States, where the United States is right now, where did it come from? Who were the people that were here before New York became New York, right? So if we're thinking about these fry breads or, you know, whatever cultural breads are, I think we could sum a lot of what that past is. And then fry bread is something about making the best of what we have. And it's also endured from that dark past to our contemporary America that we know today. So I think that fry bread is the same kind of thing where we can look at it and say that this is about survival. This is about persistence. This is about turning things around. And also that we are still here and we have not disappeared. And we as Native people have not gone anywhere.
Yeah. Mike, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Explain the story that you tell in the book.
So it starts off with an old woman. She is pulling all the ingredients together. She's surrounded by a lot of kids. And all the kids look different. There's some blonde kids. There's some curly redhead kids. There are kids that you might think look Native. There are some black kids there. And so it talks about the ingredients, how people make it, how people fry it, what the sounds and the smells and the textures are like. And it also talks about the different colors and how it can come out in different forms and different shapes. But then it morphs into the story about fry bread, about survival and what this dark past was and how we're persisting as Native people. And we are all unified by this love for fry bread. And then even though tribes have different histories, they all have some relationship to government removal, deprivation. It could also be termination of a tribe by the federal government. So there's definitely an antagonistic relationship between the United States and an antagonistic past. And this is a way where we can talk about that in a child-friendly form that encourages the kids to ask more questions, because a lot of these lessons are not taught in schools, maybe because the teachers think it's too dark to bring this up, or we only want to stick to Thanksgiving subjects where it's about settlers and indigenous people having this amicable relationship, and then no one talks about all of the other stuff that happened after that. And a lot of schools just stop at that. And so what fry bread does is it goes beyond that, and it talks about the food, and then it talks about the history, and then it also talks about the people that bring all of this together. And so the way that this is introduced might be very new for the readers. It might be very new for the parents also. But I think that the way that we change the way that non-Native people think about Indian people is through picture books. So I can see picture books. You were asking earlier about how does a law professor or New York Times writer get from that to children's books? It's the same kind of issues that I've always been writing about as a professor and a journalist, about inclusion, about authenticity, cultural authenticity, about racial intermixture, but it's the same subject, but I'm just talking about it to shorter people, right? And so and now it's just to a different audience of kids and also their parents. So I've been thinking about picture books as this way to change people's minds, right? So it's not just like, oh, this is not just a kid's book. This is something that's about social change and then about transforming a narrative. And then we're kids, they are having this book, and a lot of people's education about Indian people stops in elementary school. They don't have classes in their high school or in college where they're learning about contemporary Native people. And that's what I did, and that was the purpose in me writing this book. So then these kids that are reading it, the parents that are reading it to them, they all have a different impression after reading the book about what it means to be a Native person.
And I really like the fact that you have, you know, usually there's not an author's note at the end of a children's book, I don't think. But you have these little titles like Fry Bread is Food throughout the book. Fry Bread is Shape. Fry Bread is Sound. And then and so forth. And you give some context. Fry Bread is Color. Fry Bread is Flavor. Fry Bread is Time. And you give some context for adults. I'm going to give a my copy to a grade school librarian. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that that librarian will be able to, will help her as she talks and answers questions from the children.
Right. And I did that. One, like, I'm an academic and also a journalist, so I know how to investigate things. I know how to research things. And I knew that people would have more questions about these words that I'm suggesting in the book. So this is an additional resource. And, you know, I am a scholar, so then I know how to go and do the research and gather all of the information. And then I'm also a journalist, and then I can take this information and make it digestible to a much larger audience. And so it was a way for me in writing this to bring together all my different writing skills for all of these different audiences. And so my author's note is like a piece of scholarship. And so I've written law review articles. I've written, you know, chapters in academic anthologies or long form journalism pieces. And this is the same type of literature here, except it is, you know, aimed toward the educators and the parents of the younger audiences.
Yes.
And so this piece had footnotes. It had research. Like, I looked at a lot of different books. I interviewed some people for it. So at the end of this, and, you know, writing this, what they call the back matter, it ended up being 8 pages long. It's just about the same length as some of my academic work. I really felt that I deserved tenure for that piece afterwards, because I did as many edits, if not more edits, on that back matter than I would have for the pieces that I actually wrote to get tenure as a professor.
And I tell you, the way it's illustrated, Juana Martinez-Neal?
Yes.
What an illustrator. Oh, my goodness. I see she was a Caldecott Honor winner.
Absolutely. And so when I first started the project, say probably 2015, so this has been 4 or 5 years in the making, we looked a long time for illustrators, and we found her, but we had to wait because she had so many projects. And then I said, it is definitely worth the wait, and I want to do this right. And she had this immediate connection when she read the manuscript, and she decided that she had to take the project. And I knew from looking at her artwork for the first time that it had this warmth, that it had this emotional quality to it, and this sweetness as well. And I wanted to be able to convey the love that people have for each other and then also for this bread. And she was also really great about drawing different kinds of faces with different skin tones and different body types. And so I knew that she was going to be someone that would be very conscientious about what the art is communicating to some of these readers who might not be able to read yet. And I thought it was wonderful going through this in a different way of analyzing how ideas are communicated by essentially taking like one of those jeweler's monocles, you know, the things that people look at when they're looking at pictures very closely.
Yeah.
And this is what we were doing with the art, because we would look at it and be like, oh, wow, we got to change the eyebrows on that one. Or the skin tone on that person is a little red. So all of these artistic visual representations could have political meaning.
Yeah.
And so it could be that, you know, the red skin tone might symbolize alcoholism. Right. And that is definitely a no-no. You know, when you're talking about Indian people, some of the people, the characters were not wearing suits. That could symbolize poverty. And then, you know, and then we're not wanting to convey these, you know, negative ideas about Native America. It could be like the shape of the grandma's hip or the length of someone's neck. Right. Because then they would have been a little bigger. And so there are a lot of health concerns about what fry bread has done to Native communities. Some people really hate it and say that it contributes to a problem of obesity and diabetes and heart disease, and that fry bread is the culprit. I don't think it is, because people don't eat or should not eat fry bread every day. It's not like a table thing. Right. And at least the way that I make it, you can't just like whip it up and like, you know, have it ready in an hour. It takes like 5 or 6 hours the way I do it. And so some people have those health concerns. So then you can't draw really, really huge characters, because then it might look like the problems that some people are bringing up about fry bread. And so it was just really amazing to have these week-long conversations about, you know, the skin tone, or, you know, the shape of someone's body, or what the background looks like. I remember, so it has a, one of the pages has a picture, and the page is called Fry Bread is Sound. And it shows a cast iron skillet, and the bread is being fried. And there's a hand with a tattooed wrist that is gripping the skillet. And Juana was nice enough to include me in the book, and so that wrist is mine. And so you can tell it's contemporary. You can tell that it's probably a male hand. And so, you know, there are two things going on, right? It switches from fry bread being cooked by women, mostly who are older, to someone who is male and someone who is a little bit younger, and then also someone who has a tattoo, right? So it's like, this is something that is definitely like in, you know, recent history. And then on this page, Fry Bread is Sound, I remember the first representation of it, it had a certain kind of stove where the stove signaled to me like this very too modern, maybe a little too upper middle class, version of what a stove could look like. And then I remember having this conversation with Juana saying, like, I think it might be more realistic to have something that is not like a Viking stove, right? And because you could tell the way that it looked that it was a really expensive stove. And I thought, I think we need to make this more, at least like this one thing, you know, I loved everything about this art, and I loved how we were able to work together.
Oh, for sure.
And then she was like, you know, it was definitely the hardest project that I've ever worked on, right? Because there was so much back and forth and discussion about the representations. But then she also has said, you know, it's one of the, she feels very close to it as well. And it was just really great to collaborate with her as an author and her as the illustrator. And we were able to work together because we wanted to get it right. And we didn't want to have someone to come afterwards and say, like, oh, you really should have done it
this way or that way. Yeah. Sean in Chautauqua, will give you a chance to join in. Sean, hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So my question is about the toppings regionally that gets put on fry bread. I grew up in Connecticut where we call it fried dough. And obviously we have sugar and cinnamon, but also it's marinara and Parmesan cheese that typically goes on it. And then now I live in Phoenix, and it's your fry bread, you know, that has your traditional Mexican taco toppings. It's beans and meats. Is there something different in the Southeast or in Oklahoma that I'm not aware of? I've been a big fry bread fan, so I appreciate your show.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I always think of fry bread as more of a savory thing. Some people might have it as breakfast, right? They could put, like, jam and butter on it, just like you would toast. I always think of fry bread with a lot of vegetables because that's just the way that I eat. So I think of it with corn. I think of it with mashed potatoes. I think of it with beans, definitely, as you said. But I think definitely the most traditional and kind of popular way would be as an Indian taco. But I think that at least the way that I make it, Indian tacos are a little more difficult because if you make your fry bread flat and you're rolling it out with a rolling pin, then you can heap all of the things from the taco on top of that. But the way that I make mine, it's a little rounder, and all the shapes are like, it just kind of comes out whatever way that the dough hits the oil. And so mine, like tacos, are a little bit more difficult. So people can use it however they want. And then at least the way that we've done it forever in my family is that it is a bread that goes alongside other food rather than part of the food itself, right?
Yeah.
So it's, like, we don't use it as, like, oh, we make, like, a hamburger or something like that. Like, definitely, the, like, other types of Southeast or Southwest foods alongside it, but usually the way that we do it, not on top of the food.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. Pat in Middleton, your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. Really great, interesting show. Hey, mine goes back... I went to medical school at Ohio State, and they had an elective on an Apache reservation for 2 months, and I jumped at that. It was a great experience. Didn't have any experience with fry bread there, but that got me introduced to the Indian Health Service, and after my pediatric training, my wife and I decided to, or maybe I decided and she came along, to spend 2 years volunteered for the Indian Health Service in Gallup, New Mexico, with the Navajos, Zunis, and Hopis. And the long story short is I became very good friends with a middle-aged nursing assistant on the hospital floor, and she was just outstanding and great person. She invited my wife and me to her son's high school graduation and the follow-up party, and that graduating from high school on the reservation was really a pretty big deal, so I felt very honored. Well, when we got to the party, a big part of it was the Navajo fry bread, and I thought it was, you know, one of the best things I'd ever eaten, and talked to them a little bit about it, you know, the kind of how you're talking as far as it being part of their culture. I left after my 2 years, and maybe a month and a half later, and she actually gave me some fry bread as a parting gift, and I felt just so honored. So anyway, it just brought back some great memories from the fry bread from the Navajo reservation. And before I'm going to go off the air here, but I'm thinking about buying your book for my grandson's almost 2 for Christmas. Is the book available?
Yeah, definitely is. You can get it at your local independent store or, you know, online somewhere.
Yeah, it should be available everywhere, and it's available right now. And Pat, I'm glad you brought that up because I'd forgotten to mention that, and I should have. Well, that's a great story that Pat told.
Definitely, and I love how he felt so honored that she had given him the fry bread. I think that when anyone makes food, it's definitely an extension of themselves. Because making food and cooking, it's an act of love when you're doing it for someone else. And especially something like fry bread, you're not going to go through like all of the motions of making this fry bread for someone that you don't like.
No.
So then, like, when you make a cake for someone, right, or you're making a pie, right, you know, it's like, who's the lady that's bringing the pies, like, to your Thanksgiving dinner or your Christmas dinner, you know, whatever your, you know, feast, family feast might be. And she's making this, and when she's thinking about making it and actually making it, she's thinking about the people that are going to eat it. Right. And then so you're making sure that you do it right. Like, you wash your hands, you prepare the surface. You don't want to burn it. Right. Because then you don't want people to think that you're a bad and incompetent cook. So then to have that extension of themselves to another person, I think that, you know, that's one of the highest expressions of I care for you, and I care for you enough to feed you and to keep you alive in this way.
Yeah. Pat, thanks again. I want to give Shelley a chance from Trigo to join us. Shelley, hi.
Hi. When listening to this, it's fun. I'm in northern Wisconsin and have been, had worked on and still support the Couture Ojibwe tribe, which is near Hayward, Wisconsin. So they have a great powwow in the summer, Honor the Earth, and many, many booths have various kinds of fry bread. And one of the things that I learned was that different regions, as you were describing, there are different textures and shapes, recipes that are used for the fry bread. And it really represented a diversity, like the Southwest. Good friends are Ojibwe and then Hopi-Tewa. And so they explained to me that not much in the Southwest, the fry bread is flatter, and even they'll put a little hole in the middle to keep it more flat and larger. And then the north or the northeast, it's more puffier. And yes, can be either split and used in hamburgers or tacos. But many times, like you said, just like a the side, you know, like your bread on the side of the meal. And so it just brought back those
great memories. Shelley, thank you so much. Well, Kevin, as you were saying, there are as many types of fry bread out there practically as there are people, certainly as there are tribes and of one sort or another. And this has been just a fabulous 45 minutes. I want to thank you so much for the book first. As I said, I'm going to pass my copy on to a local grade school. I know a teacher there who will really enjoy this book. And I thank you for writing it and working on it. And I hope we have a chance to talk again. I really appreciate your being with us today, Kevin.
You are welcome. And thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, yeah. Get a copy of Kevin's book. Christmas and holiday season is coming up. Perfect time. The book is titled Fry Bread, A Native American Family Story, and the author, Kevin Noble Millard. And I highly recommend it to you. Well, coming up, we are going to switch gears a little bit and talk about the Mississippi River. I guess not only a little, but maybe a lot. We'll talk about what's going on there with Reggie McLeod, editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.